Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, author Amy Efron talks about how she met her husband.
He took me to a French restaurant, and he had Googled me and decided I was going to order white wine, bottled water, which was true, salad with dressing on the side, which was also true, and fish. And I ordered the cassoulet. We went out into the driveway of the peninsula, and he kissed me for the first time, and all of the valets started applauding.
Today on the show, accomplished author Amy Efron talks about how she and her husband met. Stay close.
Hi, this is Amy Efron, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of 9.5 years, God help me, Amy Efron, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with actor Willie Garson. Do you know Willie Garson?
I don't.
Wow. Wow. What a talent. He's been in over 300 television episodes. Well, He played Carrie Bradshaw's best friend in Sex and the City.
Right.
For 6 seasons.
Right.
2 movies.
Right.
So he is not only an accomplished actor, but he's very well dressed, which he said he learned on the set of Sex and the City.
That's so funny. Yeah.
And anyway, he brought forth the topic adoption because he adopted his son when his son was 7 years old. And Willie did this as a
single... That's very cool.
It's very cool. He did it as a single man. He's not married. He just always wanted a child. And he didn't meet the woman of his dreams or whatever. And so he adopted a beautiful child. And now it's been 10 years. And the kid is away at college. And, you know, Willie Garson, he's a hero, man. I love that guy. So you guys, go back. Listen to Willie's story about adopting his son. It's a very nice story as well. Which is, it's nice to hear good stories.
There are a lot of good stories in L.A. People don't know that. They don't believe that about us. But the truth of the matter is you're a very good story L.A.
Oh,
you're story worthy.
Oh, well, I hope you're right. Anyway, you guys, I'm super excited you're here today because I am
No, you're actually story worthy. That's what you're actually called. You're story worthy.
I am story worthy. That's true. And I've been for so long now. Anyway, you guys, I am here today with a very accomplished author, Amy Efron, and she brings forth the topic, how my husband and I met. And
my present husband.
Your present husband. I know, because I was going
to
say.
Which really irritates him. He wishes that I refer to him as my husband as opposed to my present
husband.
My new
husband.
Second
husband.
My present yes. husband. As if there might be another someday.
You don't know.
Right,
you don't know. I've done it twice myself.
Right.
And so I have this story twice. And
are you presently married?
No, I'm not.
Well, see,
married.
There could be another one.
Yeah, I don't know. They say third time is a charm, but I'm not, I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I need to get my own shit together first.
Right.
And then put it on to another person.
Right. I don't know. I thrive on codependency. So there you go. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well, you never know. Listen, you have had such an extraordinary life. First of all, you're one of 4 girls. I'm one of 5 girls. So
where are you in the pecking order?
I'm the youngest.
Me too.
I know. And I feel like a bit of a kinship with you.
Right.
With all these sisters. So much estrogen in one household.
Well, my sisters actually, I have to say, is your family close in age?
My mother had 6 kids under the age of 10.
Oh, yeah. No, my older sisters are I'm from a different... I was just a thing that happened.
But yet you're all
later.
You're all writers.
Yeah.
Your parents were screenwriters.
They were. I actually have a sister who writes mysteries too. And in fact, the nice thing, one of the fun things about The Other Side of the Wall is, as she says, I'm kind of treading on her territory because she's a very well-known mystery writer.
Oh, that's super
funny. She's been nominated
for
a bunch of Edgars, and now she says, I'm treading on her mystery territory.
That's super funny. That's Hallie, your sister, Hallie. That's super funny. I've also enjoyed your sister, Delia. Yeah, she's very accomplished as well.
She's very funny. She's great.
Did you ever watch one of your older sisters' movies or television shows and think to yourself, wait a minute, that was my joke, or I said that.
No, I think that's a thing that That's not my line.
Yeah.
That might be somebody else's line, but... Somebody else might say that. Or in some cases, there have been a couple of instances where I recall being called and said, is it okay if I use this?
Yeah, sure.
That there was a kind of respect. And,
oh, that's
and,
nice.
Yeah.
There's always been competition in my family, but it's been more in terms of like, who has the best Christmas decorations? Or like, who put a pond in the front yard first? Or who went
Wait, where's your pond?
Yeah, right. I know, right? I have a baseball field.
I like your baseball field. It's really cool. We're going to place bets any minute.
That's right. But in other words, in my family, they're all back in Pittsburgh where I'm from. And the competition is more like, who went on a certain cruise first? Or who traveled somewhere exotic first?
We don't have that kind of competition.
Yeah, because you guys have always been much more in the entertainment world, I guess, right?
I guess so. I don't know. I mean, sisters fight. Some years you get along, some years you don't. But if anyone else says anything bad about you, you're going to present a united front. So yeah.
Well, I think you've got a really interesting background. I have here that you...
I also have a million kids myself.
Yeah, you've got like five kids. Some of
have three and my husband has two.
Yeah.
Alan Rader has, my present husband, who we're about to speak about, has
five
two.
Five children.
So five. And then I have four new ones. I have two 3-year-olds and 2 1-year-olds.
Oh, my gosh.
And they call me Duchess, which I think is very befitting of someone... who writes children's novels set in England. They said, what do you want to be called? And I said, Duchess. And everyone laughed and said, you'll never sell it. The one-year-olds call me Duchess, and sometimes they call me the Duchess.
That is the cutest thing. In other words, no grandma, no gaga, no granny.
Duchess. And they can all say it, Duchess.
I think that is so
damn
cute.
We're going to Duchess's house.
Do you just love having so much family? You must.
Sometimes it can be a lot of family.
Yeah. Do you guys do like holiday dinners?
We
do. Bring people in?
Yes.
You have the big
Even
meals.
If we're staying at a hotel because we've been evacuated, yes.
Oh, because of the fires.
Yeah.
Yeah. In not in Malibu, but that was more like in the
that
Palisades.
That was in Brentwood.
In Brentwood, yeah. Gosh,
the Getty
so scary.
Fire. Yeah.
So scary. You know, I always talk about how much I love the weather out here. Of course, obviously, who doesn't like the weather in Los Angeles? But when you start talking about the fires, mudslides, you know, it gets precarious. In some ways, we have more weather than other people, is my point.
I know, and nobody realized it.
Nobody thinks
yeah.
that.
And all those people moved from L.A., from New York, thinking it was great to be in L.A., and it got really crowded and too trafficky.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, some of them will go back. It would be great.
I doubt that. I'm highly doubting that. Okay, here's something I find fascinating about you. You covered the Manson trial.
I did. I was really young.
You were 17. In the courtyard,
yeah,
in the courtroom.
Yeah.
And so how did you get placed there?
I was working for a magazine called Scanlon's, which was started by the same person who started a magazine called Ramparts, which mm-hmm. was very famous. It's where Hunter Thompson did his first Gonzo pieces, Ralph Steadman. There were a lot of amazing people who worked there. And I was technically the receptionist. And I worked in New York. And I worked for an editor named Sidney Zion, and then there was an editor in San Francisco named Warren Hinkle. And I told Sidney that I wanted to go cover the Manson trial, that I knew Terry Melcher, that I had friends who lived next door to the Spahn Ranch, not realizing
is
at
that
the time,
true?
Yes, not realizing at the time that the Spahn Ranch is so big and their ranch was so big that it was almost 8 miles away.
Wow.
I actually went to the Spahn Ranch.
Wow.
It was really interesting to see.
Wow, so you saw all the kids, as it were, hanging out?
Well, some of them were in jail already, yeah.
did you see the movie this summer?
I did.
The Hollywood movie? How true was that?
We don't want to spoil it.
Right. Sure we do.
Obviously, have you seen it?
yeah. Once Upon a Time
in
Hollywood.
Because then it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then the whole ending is...
That's true.
...is a whole other thing, which is kind of magical realism...
I loved it.
I have to say, I completely and totally loved it. Was I affected by it? Yes, but for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah. And did you meet the girls like Squeaky Fromm.
I interviewed Squeaky.
You interviewed her.
Yeah, I loved Squeaky.
You were essentially the same age, I would think, or she was a little
yeah,
older.
Yeah, I used to get strip searched every time I walked into the, left the courtroom. In those days, there were no cell phones. So yeah. If you wanted to make a phone call, you had to go outside the courtroom into the phone booth.
Yeah.
And then this one guard like had a thing about me, and every time, because I had hair down to my waist, she'd strip. They did not understand that I had press credentials.
Wow.
They just, or they
did. They didn't believe you. They didn't think you were old
enough.
Well,
they knew I had press credentials because yeah. I had press credentials, but that wasn't the point.
And there was no like security going into the courtroom.
Well, there was
then.
Security because oh. a judge, there had been a shooting at the downtown courthouse. The week before the trial started, someone shot at a judge.
Oh, my God.
And so it was the first instance of security.
Was it related at all to
no.
the Manson thing?
No,
it was just,
no, it was just
extraneous.
It was somebody,
crazy.
Yeah, some like random incident in a courtroom.
And so when you covered the Manson trial, then you went and you wrote articles then?
I didn't. Unfortunately, the magazine I was working for folded before. In those days, you had really long lead times.
Yeah.
Before, and then I didn't want to write a book. And I knew Ed Saunders, who I loved, was going to write a book. And I was happy to just move on. And I went to work at Sesame Street in the Electric Company,
yeah.
doing books and records and toys and games and writing for the Electric Company. So I actually have children's education cred, which people yeah. don't really understand.
Well, Sesame Street was all about empowering kids.
Yes.
I mean, that was the whole thing. But
yeah.
but real quick, so after you covered the Manson trial, you never said to yourself, you know, I think this might be my path. You know, I'm gonna be a courtroom reporter. I'm going to be a...
Well, I covered the Michael Jackson, Conrad Murray trial. 5 years ago, but that's my only
that.
Two trials.
Amy,
I only
what
I don't know. I thought it
that?
Was going to be more interesting than it was, as it turned out.
What took you to that? The Conrad Murray trial.
I knew a lot of people that were technically involved. I had a feeling that I'd get some stories, which I did. I covered it for the Daily Beast and Newsweek.
Unbelievable. No, I had no idea.
Yeah, that.
And did you?
So I've done it twice. I don't think
case,
I'm going to do
I mean,
it again.
Did you call and say I want to do this?
Or? I called my agent at the time yeah. and said I'd like to do it. And a couple of people said, "Do you want to do it?" And I did it for the Daily Beast and Newsweek. Yeah,
that's pretty cool, Amy. That you
Thank
found
you.
It interesting, and they said, "Okay, just yeah, you can have it."
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
No, it was nice.
Yeah,
it was nice. It wasn't as interesting a trial as I thought it was going
yeah.
to be.
Yeah, everything around.
Yeah.
It's all difficult now, looking back.
Yeah.
Did you see the HBO special?
I haven't yet.
Around Michael? Yeah. It's more than upsetting. And as
I
a
haven't.
Parent,
I, don't
as a
I actually don't think I want to.
I think you will cry the whole way through.
Yeah,
as I
don't
I
think I want
it's
to.
It's not great. It's
yeah.
not great. I want to say one more thing. We're going to get to your story because I am anxious to hear about
I didn't mean to do the
how your
Conrad
husband
Murray
and
segue
you met.
There, though.
No, I know. But it's fascinating. And just one more thing. You did work on... As an executive, you worked on one of my favorite movies of all time, Out of Africa.
Thank you.
And what have you been to Africa?
I have not, actually. Have you?
I have not, but I
yeah,
follow...
I'd love to. Let's go.
I follow Kruger National Park
oh,
on Twitter,
okay.
and
Let's go to Africa. I'm dying to go.
I talk back and forth with Kruger about 5 times a day on Twitter. They must think I'm crazy. Someday I'm going to show up at Kruger National Park, and they're going to be like, oh, that's the crazy Twitter lady from L.A. who
yeah,
has
no.
so many questions about... The animals, like I can't. I'm
no,
fascinated.
A lot of people had tried to make the movie before, and then we finally figured out a way to marry the biography of Isaac Dinesen to the Out of Africa book.
It's
too,
just so to,
and
beautiful.
So, and Sidney Pollack was there,
yeah.
and Ugh. Kurt Ludtke was there, and so essentially, I'm the person who put it in development. I was not still an executive when it got made,
mm-hmm.
although Sidney used to thank me. For it
Interesting.
Endlessly because it was very difficult rights to put together.
Yeah, yeah, and because of you know,
I don't remember why.
I see
because of Isaac Dinesen's estate.
Yeah.
I don't even remember why, but it was very complicated.
Did you ever think that Robert Redford and Meryl Streep would
yes,
be the stars?
Yes, I did actually.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Sometimes now when I look back on it, because I actually have, I watch it about once a year. I really do.
Yeah.
I just love it so much. And one of the things I love so much are the costumes. Meryl Streep, she must change her outfit, I don't know, 120 times. But sometimes when I watch it now, you can't, I mean, obviously Robert Redford, he's so hot and he's so beautiful, especially in that film and the plane and the thing. But when he's up against Meryl Streep, it seems unequal because she's so good. He seems
oh,
almost
I don't feel
like,
that way at
you,
all.
He
I'm
just,
madly in love with him.
Yeah, I am too, but it just seemed against her in that film.
I didn't feel that way.
You didn't? Okay.
Uh-uh.
Okay, I just felt like he just a little more it wasn't as, I guess no. Maybe I want him to be more European or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, he's hot, and he was just absolutely fabulous in that movie. And you must have been thrilled. Did you get to go to the premiere of that?
I don't remember.
I bet you did.
I really don't remember.
And I bet it was in one of the big Egyptian theaters here in L.A.
I absolutely have no memory of this.
Well, I'm sorry to bring it up to you then.
That's all right. It's all right.
Anyway.
But I thought Robert Redford was great, I have to say.
Well, he certainly is beautiful. I know that. I'll say that. Listen, you guys, before we get to Amy's story, I wanted to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy, and that'd be a lot of fun. Social media is a pain in the ass. Am I right, Amy?
Well, it's informative sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's just sometimes it's hard to touch all the bases.
Well, sometimes my husband says to me, what are you doing with that? And I don't have a good answer besides, hi, I'm on my Instagram, and you may not think that's important, but my publisher does. I'm sorry. Yeah, right.
You can hire somebody to do that, though. You know that. No, I'm just saying. I mean, I have done many people's social media accounts. I mean, you could do that. I'm not telling you to do that, but if you don't want to do it.
I said sometimes my husband says to me, what are you doing?
Does he think you're crazy?
And I say, I'm on social media. Yeah.
I like Twitter, I will say. That's my jam.
I love Instagram.
Yeah, interesting. Most people do.
Amy Efron on Instagram and Twitter, EPHRON. Please follow me.
Please do, at Amy Efron, and I'll be posting this stuff, and we'll get it all around as well. All right, you guys. One more thing. I want you to follow me over at storysmashshow.com and my game show Story Smash, played every month at the Hollywood Improv. This month in December, it's going to be our 30th show in a row.
Wow.
And that ain't nothing in Los Angeles.
Right.
And it's December 28th at 7:30, Hollywood Improv, storysmashshow.com. Check it out, you guys.
Now, super you know fun. That Lorraine Newman does the audios for my books, right?
That's funny you should say that, because I thought that you did a lot of the...
No, Lorraine does them.
She does all the audiobooks.
All the voices. She did all three, yeah.
That's very
interesting.
It's
the only one she's ever done.
Because I have it written down here that you did it, but it's not
Lorraine,
your voice.
No, Lorraine did it.
Interesting,
But we've been best friends since high school.
Oh,
and then
she's
we
the best.
Reconnected during Saturday Night Live.
That's the best.
Because I'd moved to New York,
And
I was going out with a Lampoon writer, and I was writing for the Lampoon. And then when SNL started, Lorraine and I re-met, and we've been best friends forever. So these books are told by a third-person narrator who sounds a little bit like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lorraine has a very good aptitude for imitating me. I can imitate her, too.
That's stunning, because I did listen
right,
to
you
some
listened
of the audiobook,
and, thought it was
and I
me.
Did think it was
yeah,
you.
But it wasn't, and she can do all the English accents, and she does the Italian and the
that's
this. And the, they make her do every single voice. Yeah. It's extraordinary to watch.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to record an audiobook.
Sure. Yeah, I've done 11 of them.
Yeah, hard.
In my closet.
Yeah, they're hard, though.
Yes, they're more than hard, and it takes a tremendous amount of time. But anyway, also, I love Lorraine Newman's sister, Tracy Newman.
I love Tracy,
She's
too.
One of my very favorite artists, singer-songwriters, and she is stunning. She's stunning, and her body of work is extraordinary. She's been on Storyworthy. Lorraine hasn't, but Tracy has, and both those women, though, super, super talented. You are in good company with those friends, no doubt. All right, you guys, we're going to get right to Amy's story. Amy Efron, I'm talking with her. You hear her voice. She is the author of The Other Side of the Wall, which was just published by Penguin Kids. And it's the companion novel to her first two young adult books. One, the first...
Actually, they're middle grade, but
okay,
we say 8 to 80.
Yeah.
They're really middle grade chapter, really chapter books.
Okay.
They're novels like The Secret Garden or... It's kind of I call them a modern day mashup of an old fashioned children's book.
Yeah. Interesting. So the first one that you did was called The Castle in the Mist, and then Carnival Magic, and now The Other Side of the Wall.
And they're considered standalones, even though they're about the same two American kids, Tess and Max. And Tess is sort of a superhero when they get to the other side.
Yeah.
She's sort of a superhero in this life, too. And Max, her little brother, is a little bit more methodical. Calculating a little, and I don't mean calculating in a, I just mean methodical.
Yeah, as the brother.
And also he likes everything to make sense, and not everything makes sense when they go to England.
Well, this is fascinating, and you know, my daughter is 12 years old, and I think she's going to absolutely love this book. You guys follow Amy, like I said, on Twitter and Instagram at Amy Efron. And by the way, I do have to mention that you are a contributor and a contributing editor at Vogue and Vogue.com. And you have appeared in many, many, many publications. New York Times. Have you been in The Atlantic?
No.
You seem like an Atlantic person as well. But you've just appeared in all sorts of newspapers and publications, and you're very accomplished.
Thank you.
And you never stop, and you keep going.
And I also produced A Little Princess with Mark Johnson.
Unbelievable.
Which is Alfonso Cuarón's. It was my mother's favorite book, A Little Princess.
Is that right?
And it was my idea to bring it to Mark and Barry, and it took us 7 years to get it made, but it was also Alfonso Cuarón's first movie.
Amazing. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the amazing Amy Efron.
I think the way I met my husband was that I imagined him. And in a way, I think the way he met me, he says, is that he imagined me too. Although he did not imagine when he imagined me that I also had three kids who were 15, 12, and 9 at the time. He didn't imagine the flying circus. But he did imagine me. And I had gone to dinner with a dear friend of mine who's a wonderful writer named Elizabeth Forsyth Haley. And I sat down with her and I announced that I was going to meet someone in Los Angeles. And it was going to be someone who was in my field, but not really, in entertainment, but not really, sort of adjunct to entertainment, but would understand my world and would be happy with their own success and would want to, more than anything in the world, be loved. And I think that's part of the problem with some relationships, is that you marry someone who doesn't know how to accept love, and that's not what they want. They don't necessarily want love. They want something else. And that's a very important component of, and Betsy said to me, get over yourself. It's not going to happen in this town. And I said, okay, fine. And I went about my business, and the next day I opened my email, and there was an email from Betsy that said, ask and ye shall receive. And her dear friend, Carla Christofferson, who's a lawyer, as Alan is, my husband, Alan Rader now, who had been sort of Carla's mentor. Mm-hmm. He'd originally hired her at O'Melveny. And then Carla's kind of amazing, but Carla didn't know me at the time, and Betsy didn't know Alan at the time. And Carla was sending out a blast email which said simply, does anyone know anyone for my friend Alan Rader?
And wow, wait, she must have sent that just to her good friends. I mean, she sent it to your friend Elizabeth.
No, she sent it out to about 120 people. Let's just be honest about this. She sent it to 120 people. There's no question. We all know this, okay? It was like Alan's own private dating service. I don't know how it happened. And he had, in fact, a couple of dates before me, but I think I came in second or third on the date line, and he never went out with anybody else again, but not necessarily for the right reasons, because he told his best friend the only reason he went out with me a second time was to see whether he understood anything I said the second time as opposed to the first time. But the thing that I always laugh and say that it really was about the cassoulet. He took me to a French restaurant and he had Googled me and decided I was going to order white wine, bottled water, which was true, salad with dressing on the side, which was also true, and fish. And
like I ordered what I would order.
A bottle of water, white wine, dressing with salad on the side, and I ordered the cassoulet. And he was so startled that I would order a French peasant dish.
What does that mean, French peasant dish?
It's actually a dish that's almost made out of leftovers. It's white, it's beans, and it's sausage, and if you have a leftover duck, or you have a leftover chicken, or a leftover leg of lamb, and tomatoes, you put it in, and there's some wine in it, and so it's really a country dish. It's really a country dish.
Yeah.
And it's something I make, and it's something I like a lot, and it's very rare to find it on an LA menu. In fact, that restaurant has closed since.
Will you spell it? I just want to see what it looks like. Cassoulet.
Cassoulet. Cassoulet.
I see.
I'll have you over for cassoulet. How's that?
It's a good word. No, I'm looking at it. I'm thinking it says casserole, but I guess it's
cassoulet.
French. It's French for casserole. So put it all in one pan and cook it.
you have to make the white beans. There's stages to it. There really are. It's more complex, a little bit more complex than a soup.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially if it's very well made.
Yeah.
And it can be very high end if you add duck and there's a proper saucisson, which is the kind of sausage you're supposed to use. But in any event, we blame it on the cassoulet. And so that was how we met. But I maintain to this day that if Carla had known me and Betsy had known Alan, because my husband's a lawyer and much more methodical than I am. I mean, he cooks from recipes and I cook from my head. That's basically one of the differences between us, that they might not have introduced us.
Yeah. Interesting that you would be that different.
We are that different. Yes, absolutely.
So the meal. So you order the cassoulet. And what does he order? Do you remember?
No. Nope.
Come on.
I don't remember.
Did he get white wine?
No, red.
He had red wine.
He had red wine.
And so
he always drinks red wine.
So you're at the French restaurant.
Yeah.
You order the food.
We walked out. And what happened was I turned around and there was an independent movie theater down the street. And Y Tu Mama Tambien, Alfonso Cuarón's second movie, Mexican movie, was playing on the street corner. I said, oh my God, there's Alfonso's movie, let's go. And it was a completely spontaneous thing. And then it was a kind of strange thing because I was sort of sick at the time. And that movie's all about somebody being sick and somebody who loves them. Mm-hmm. And I was heading for, and I kept saying, Alan, you really should get involved with me because I don't know how sick I am. And then it turned out I wasn't that sick, but I did need to have some kind of surgery. And he was kind of nuts to get, he probably agrees today he was nuts to get involved with me. But we went to see Y Tu Mama Tambien.
So the movie just happened to be playing.
Yeah.
That is so meant to be.
Right.
Was it the New Art Theater?
No, this is in West Hollywood.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think which theater it was.
I don't remember. It was like a Lemley's or something.
Oh, the Lemley, right. Probably at Sunset 5. Probably.
No, it was on Beverly Boulevard.
Okay. And so you go see the movie.
Or Melrose, yeah.
And you're sitting beside one another.
Right.
Does he hold your hand?
No.
I mean, nothing.
No. The end of the story actually is kind of interesting because that's where kind of, in a way, where we ended up for a minute after the fire. Was he was going out with someone else still.
Okay, wait, you skipped ahead.
The end of the story?
No, you skipped ahead to where you found yourself after the fire. I don't think you mentioned that you guys had a house.
We didn't have a house fire. We were subject, as many people on the West Side were, to an evacuation from the Getty fire, but
recent
that was a
fires,
month ago.
About
the
a
recent
month ago.
Fire, yeah.
So, but you're bringing
that
up.
And so for a minute, yeah, we ended up at the Peninsula.
Oh.
And the Peninsula is a place where, to finish the story, I discovered that he was actually still going out with someone else.
Oh my God. And
the someone else he was going out with, weirdly, had bought my sister and Carl Bernstein's apartment in Washington, D.C.
Oh my God.
Okay, so that's a little weird. Not that I had an attitude about that, because I didn't know that at the time. I just thought, and a friend of mine came in from Texas, was like my big brother, and he took me out for dinner and he gave me a lecture and he said, you go tell that guy that he better get rid of everybody or you're just not going to see him anymore. And after a couple of shots of tequila, which I insisted I have, I went to meet Alan at the Peninsula.
Just for a drink.
For a drink. And I sat down and told him that I was really sorry, but I really didn't have time to mess around if he was going to be and blah, blah, blah. And he didn't say anything. And so I got up to leave. This is in the garden of the Belvedere. And I start to walk out and he said, wait, I think I'm falling in love with you.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we went out into the driveway of the Peninsula and he kissed me for the first time and all of the valets started applauding. It was like the end of a movie.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. Wait, after the dinner and the movie.
No, this is like three, four weeks.
So now, four weeks later is when you meet him at the Peninsula.
Right.
And so, of course, he knew right away that you've got a 15-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old.
Right.
And who did he have at that time?
And they were older.
Oh, his kids were already kind of out of the house. Yeah,
yeah,
because to take on, you know, a woman with three teenagers. I mean, I have one. I mean, three is a lot.
Yeah. And so no, his original nickname for me was Denali.
What does it mean, makes Denali?
Well, it's the highest mountain, in
Northern America.
And it makes its own weather.
Yeah. Denali, that's right. My brother used to work in Denali National Park, and one of his jobs was banging pots and pans to get the moose out of the yard.
Right.
That's the craziest thing. So that's what Alan called you, Denali.
He did then. He doesn't. Well, maybe he still does. I'm not sure.
Okay, so when you just got evacuated from the Getty fires, and
we checked in that night, actually.
You had to stay somewhere.
We went east instead of west, and we have a little bit of a relationship with the peninsula, so I called them from the car, and they had a room, and we were actually standing there when they turned LeBron James away. That was one of the hotels that turned him when he tweeted that he couldn't find a hotel that night.
Because they were sold out.
We all had, I don't know how many people were evacuated. It was really
thousands. Thousands?
Beyond thousands, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really astonishing when you think about how quickly hotels could fill up, all of them.
Right.
You know, in this town, it's not like a convention comes to town.
Right.
It's like half the population had to move.
Yeah.
Had to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the date at the peninsula.
So we have a long history
kiss,
at the peninsula.
And the valet claps. And then how long after you guys kiss at the valet at the peninsula did you get married?
Oh, quite some time, actually. We moved in together very shortly after that. We rented a house. I had a daughter who was still at Beverly High.
Yeah.
And so we rented a house for all of us in
Beverly Hills. Somewhere you could all live.
A little larger than the house I'd been living in because there were too many of us.
What did your daughters think?
And my son.
And your son. Did they say like, okay, great, let's go, Mom?
Or Well, I don't know. I think that's the question. They're very attached to him.
I'm just saying, like, at that point, obviously, they all have their own personalities, their own opinions, their own life, and they're teenagers. And so they're like, Mom, what do you mean? We're moving in.
Well, they're kind of used to, we stick together.
You have a modern family.
Right. Because I have a modern family.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
With the sisters and the, and
yeah.
And what about your kids?
And I'd been a single mother for a while. And
yeah. How long were you a single mom?
Probably 5 or 6 years at that point.
Yeah. And is their father in their lives?
He is in their lives, although he lives in Europe now.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
How many times have you been to England? Since you write so often about England, do you spend
a lot
of time
there? I've been to England
there?
A number of times, and I've been to Hampshire. Actually, Elizabeth Forsyth Haley used to have a house very close to Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first book, the kids go to Hampshire with their Aunt Evie. To her country house where there's nothing to do and they find a castle and really weird things happen. In the second book, she rents a house in Devon by the sea and Airbnbs out her own house. And she gets an Instagram account and there's Wi-Fi and there's a beach and there's a zoo and there's tons of things to do and other kids around. And she drops them at the carnival for an hour on their own, and the carnival picks up stakes and runs away with them.
I think it's so fascinating how your books tend to be like a blend of something current. Like you said, they get on Instagram or there's, you know, Wi-Fi. And then at the same time, there's this edge of adventure that a kid can actually like get into
and then
a castle.
Wi-Fi.
No Wi-Fi, right.
Yeah, you don't know the other side of the wall.
I would think as a middle reader, you know, you...
Well,
you
we get, say they're 8 to 80.
8 to 80. I know what you're saying. And there's a lot of books that I read. I got heavily into reading when I was about 11, 12, 13, because my mom, what she would do is she'd leave horror novels around the house, like Stephen King.
Right.
Or even things about like telepathy.
Right.
Psychic stuff, because she knew that would be very interesting to me.
That's very cool.
So I started reading like voraciously.
Right.
But I still read everything Stephen King puts out.
Right.
And so like his books could be at a seventh grade reading level, or you could be in your
80s. And the third book, which is The Other Side of the Wall, is set in London, and Tess is charmed by a 14-year-old boy, except that no one else can see him.
William.
And it's Christmas break.
Yeah.
And there may be a ghost in it. And then there may be spirit possession at one point. Max may not be Max anymore.
So are these kids, Tess and Max, are these kids that you've known, like, in your head forever, as it were?
Like, I think in a way, Tess is a little bit like me. Uh-huh. She has a tendency to jump into things and think about it later.
But she's the older of the two.
Yeah.
And you're the youngest of your family.
But I'm really like, I don't have the same thing that you do. I didn't have siblings who were, my closest sibling is like 6 years older than me.
I see. So it's wasn't not like all in the same house at
the same
time.
It's not like my kids who are like 2 years apart who are like whatever. They were a cabal.
I know
whatever they were.
I know what you're saying. You've got tremendous reviews on this book.
Thank you.
Kirkus Reviews talks about Tess. They say she's thoroughly a modern heroine. She's athletic, impulsive, and fearless. The siblings are authentic, and the fantastic elements are the stuff of daydreams. That's a beautiful review.
Thank you.
And then you get other great reviews from the School Library Journal. The setting is contemporary, which is what I was trying to say, yeah. Yet the language and the tone feel distinctly nostalgic, and it'll captivate readers who enjoy the ear of whimsy with a dash of risk. I love that.
Thank you.
And people have said it's reminiscent of classics like Secret Garden.
I call them a modern-day mashup of an old-fashioned children's book, and the reason I wrote them was for exactly that reason. There are no explosions. There's no guns. There's not even a proper antagonist in the first book because I wanted to take a step back from... These kids are dealing with a lot, let's be honest. The geopolitical situation alone. And their dad's a war reporter, so they've got to worry about him. The parents are in the background, but they've got deep backstories too.
Wow.
And there's a lot going on around them, and then they kind of live in a bubble.
And Teen Vogue said, Amy Efron has always been a magical storyteller, the perfect beach read for all ages. And I keep seeing this word magic coming over and over again when I read about your stuff and the reviews that you get. Everybody says you're magical.
Thank you. I'm not sure my husband would agree.
The New York Times, bursting with imagination and warmth, Amy Efron's novel for young people is a magical book in all ways. That is like unbelievable.
Thank you.
Here's one more. I don't mean to blow all the smoke up your ass, but it is impressive. Beautiful. Perfect middle graders who love classic fantasy from Booklist.
Thank you.
That is so wonderful.
I love the new one, which is The Other Side of the Wall, which also is kind of like a younger version of a Stephen King book on some level. Right.
Yeah. And to be a part of Penguin Kids, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the biggest...
Well, I'm actually at a little imprint called Philomel, who also publishes Chelsea Clinton and Justice Sotomayor. Oh. And so I'm actually in a little, like...
Good company.
With a lovely publisher and editor named Jill Santopolo, who also has a bestseller of her own, an adult bestseller.
Do you submit articles now to the different magazine publications
published 3 books in 3 years.
So
I've been on a virtual hiatus.
Yeah.
And I'll see what I'm going to do next. I need to take a beat here.
So when you write these novels, are you writing on a laptop computer or on a computer? What are you writing on?
And anything I'm on. I have a big computer, I have a laptop, I have a notebook.
Yeah, because there's different, I know what you're saying, depending on where you're sitting at in the house.
Right.
But do you go to one place in your house to write, or do you, like you said, just go anywhere and it comes to you?
Here's what I think, and I'll say it to anyone who is a single parent with kids, a single mother who also wants to write. First of all, if I was starting to write now, I would have a daytime job too. Mm-hmm. Because it's a really hard way to make a living. So, like, it really is. It's just become really tough. But if you do have 3 kids, and you, as a single parent, know this, books get written a sentence at a time.
Mm.
And that's always been my motto. I don't wake up at... When they were little, sometimes I'd wake up at 5 and then work till 7:30 and then they'd go to school and then this would happen or that would happen or I'd have this assignment or that assignment. Because in those days I used to do a lot of, and I'm not organized in that way. My life doesn't work in that way.
Yeah.
So I always think, and I think a lot of writing goes on for me in my head. Mm-hmm. I drive a lot. I'll go up to Malibu and go to the fish market.
Yeah, I love that.
And by the time I get up there, whatever I was doing has...
formulated itself in your mind.
Head.
But do you do anything on like voice memo or anything just to get ideas out?
No.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously, everybody writes in different
sometimes
ways.
Sometimes I'll pull over to the curb.
But yeah, that's what I mean. Because like,
for not myself, on a voice memo, though. I have a little notebook and
but pen. I find that like when I'm writing, like if something comes to me, if I don't write it down that second, there is no way I'm going to remember it. It
depends
just,
on what it is. It depends sometimes on you what will. It is. If you're in the middle of a book, the book stays with you as you as you travel around.
Yeah.
In fact, those characters filter everything that's going on around you, and then at one point you're done, and you go, "Oh well, people are really saying things that don't have anything to do with what I'm writing about."
That's because you're so in your head.
It's very method.
And you already, I'm sure, are thinking about their next adventure. Yes.
No.
Interesting. Do you see this ever becoming a series? Because, you know, they do these beautiful series
I actually have partnered with Alex Sokolow, who wrote Toy Story, to do the third book as a live-action feature.
Oh, man.
With
that
special effects.
Amazing.
So we'll see how that goes. We've also partnered with his brother, Sam Sokolow. We haven't started working yet. I think we may need another partner or two.
But I could I could see that being so, like, beautifully
shot. Well,
he thinks
it's a very rich universe.
Sure.
Because of all kinds of things about it.
Sure.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Movies are very hard to get made.
When you were a teenager, did you read like Flowers in the Attic and those sorts of books? Like, what did you read?
When I was a teenager, I read a lot of I read Isaac Dinesen.
Oh, interesting.
I read Thomas Mann.
Interesting.
I read William Somerset Maugham.
Yeah,
I didn't have a YA period.
That's amazing.
I went straight to real
stuff.
That's
amazing. My daughter reads... Bill Bryson has some good stuff out for
middle
readers.
I'm not sure there was
readers.
A lot of YA stuff when I was... But we also had a very extensive library, and I read a lot. I mean, I read Jane Austen. Those were the things I read when I probably
your genetics. It's got to be in your genetics to have that sort of comprehension, because that's advanced.
I don't know. I think these kids are more advanced than we give them credit for sometimes. I think that Parkland kids are amazing, for example.
No kidding. Yeah, they're really... Well, I always tell my daughter, her generation is going to turn this whole thing around.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, what do you like to Instagram about? You must take pictures, obviously.
I take pictures. Yes.
But is it like regular stuff, or do you like... Because some people have very, very streamlined Instagram feeds, you know, where everything is a certain genre.
I think I'm a little random.
Yeah.
I think, it can be clouds.
Yeah.
It can
That's
be
nice.
A mannequin.
Yeah.
It can be a strange shot. It can be a little kid.
Yeah. I love the artistry of some people's pages. You know, my one girlfriend, she does everything on her Instagram feed is in muted colors. So, like, she chose, I think it's like blue, green, yellow. She chose three colors. And then she just takes pictures in that vein and posts them so that it looks very
beautiful. See, I'm not that organized. I don't do anything in,
But, I mean, I'm just saying it's, like, interesting. Yeah. Some people, you know, they make it, you can do a whole art form, obviously, you know.
I'm big on food.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm big on clouds. I'm big on swans.
Do you cook?
Swans. I do. Yeah. I make cassoulet.
Cassoulet. How many nights a week do you cook?
My husband's a very good cook.
That's nice.
And so I don't know the answer to that. Maybe three.
Yeah.
But we also like to go out.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's nice if you can break it down. Like, okay, I'll make a meal, you make a meal, and we eat out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or we eat out and then take home leftovers.
Yeah.
And we have another meal. But you don't have to. That way, when you do cook, it's kind of like, look at that. We're cooking.
Right.
I have to, obviously, I cook for my daughter, you know, obviously. And when she's here with me, that's by far the best I eat. Do you know what I mean? Because when she's not with me, it doesn't even occur to me that I should be eating until
my stomach
starts growling.
When my husband's out of town, I barely eat.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's not good. See, I'm very codependent.
Yeah.
I really needed to find a husband. I'm very glad I found Alan.
I'm super happy you found him, too.
Thank you.
And I'm super happy you came to talk about
your
new
book. It was so fun to meet you.
You are super interesting, you guys. Get out there and purchase The Other Side of the Wall. Just published by Penguin Kids. It's a perfect book for middle readers this Christmas. Or all the way up. Anybody that likes a taste of adventure, some excitement, good news in the world. You know what I mean? That's what you're all about, Amy Efron. I can tell.
Well, the books are about healing love, too.
We could use a little more of that. I'll tell you that right now.
And the other thing they're about is loyalty, and I'm going to do something with you that no one's going to see.
Pinky promise?
But when pinky swear.
Pinky swear.
When Tess and Max get in trouble, they give each other a pinky swear, and it means, stare at me, that you have each other's backs forever.
Oh,
deal?
I love that deal.
Okay.
I love that.
We just did it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you find Amy over there on social media at Amy Efron. And do you have a website?
I do.
And is it amyefron.com?
Right.
Okay, find her over there, amyefron.com. Let her know that you like her story. You should do that. And then tweet me over there on Twitter as well. Would you do that at Storyworthy? That's where I like to hang out, Twitter. Unfortunately, in the middle of the night. I'm not proud of that, but that's insomnia. All right, you guys, I want to thank you so much again for tuning in, and I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. And listen, you guys, if you didn't hear a sponsor, well, you did last week, or you will next week, so please keep them in mind, especially Scan Digital, because those guys, they're doing really good work over there digitizing your stuff. Go to scandigital.com/storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented Amy Efron, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
My name is Christine so Blackburn, saying make it a storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.